This is your teacher, Dingley May, addressing you with his heart. Let us feel the spirit of wisdom embracing us together. I shall deal now with your documentary lesson number 11. Peace be unto you. Now, my beloved, you remember in your last lesson and in the previous lesson also, we have referred somewhat to physiology. Now, you're advised to take up the study if you wish to and if you have time. For the more we can learn about the operation of the forces of our own body, the better will we be able to appreciate the effect of these forces. In mental physics, of course, we're only concerned with physiology insofar as it is related to our subject. Now, in this present lesson number 11, we pass on to what is called the Great Illusion. This is the first part. Now, you remember our reference to a box, don't you? We referred a lesson or two back to a box. Well, now let us revert again to that idea. To show how man is under the dominion of his senses. Now, what is true of that box and the way in which we deceive ourselves by thinking that we are actually looking at the box when we are merely looking at a square form and a certain color is true of the whole universe in relation to ourselves. Man is under the dominion of his senses, and it is here that the great illusion takes place. Now, I am sure that every one of us can see, when it is pointed out, that we do not sense things as they are, but only as they appear. And, as I said in an earlier lesson, there is no evidence to show that two people, you and I, for example, sense an object in the same way as we are. So, objects appear. As we are, so is our universe. Now, my beloved, I hope that you will be able to see this, because I admit that it took me quite a time to master this truth that I saw intellectually, but could not work it out in my own life. As I am, so my world. As I am, so I make my universe. Now, the senses are the avenues by which the mind observes phenomena. And as we do not sense things as they are, the mind has to correct our observations or interpret them. Now, in the last lesson, we saw that the illusion of the universe existing externally has to be corrected by our reason. Very few of us receive this correction, however. And so, we continue all through life to have a false idea of the reality of things. Now, what do I mean? Well, let us take an illustration. Let us take the sight as an instance. Now, we all see things upside down. And the mind has to correct to this, placing the images in their proper position. Now, think long on this, and then you will grip the idea that we are deceived constantly by our senses. We look at the sun, and we see an orb about the size of a dinner plate. Yet we have only to think for a single moment to realize that the sun is of enormous proportions and millions of miles away. The horizon appears quite near, yet we know by experience that it is nowhere. We see the sun rise over the horizon. But ages passed before man's reason discovered that the sun did not rise. And these, of course, are but a few of the deceptions of sense. Now, my beloved, in like manner, we are deceived into thinking that we were born but to die, born but to fail. Now, this is a greater illusion even than that of the sun rising. And we sincere students of mental physics, have yet to correct it and be emancipated from it. And the purpose, the underlying foundational purpose of mental physics, is to assist us in the process of our own emancipation. Let us then think the thoughts we have a right to think. The average person is quite unconscious of the fact that he can know anything except that which is received through the senses. Really very funny when you think of it. But he is just as ignorant, too, that his senses are deceiving him every moment that he lives. He is subject to this constant betrayal. And this must unfortunately continue until such time as he is able to realize what his senses are doing with him. It is not only the sight, but all the senses are in the same state, betrayers, all of them. How frequently do we hear people say, "Oh, how beautifully those flowers smell." Well, reason dictates, does it not, that flowers do not and cannot smell? You notice here, of course, the importance of right speech. If you will sit and think a little, you will find that there are thousands of similar, apparently unimportant, deceptions of mind created thus by the senses. During the next day or two, watch the conversation of yourself with other people and see how many things we say which are not correct. And our minds, unfortunately, are deceived. So we see that the mind of man, the mind of millions of human beings, is enslaved, deceived by these expressions into a state of auto-hypnosis. It would be easy to fill volumes with evidence of the illusion of the senses. Here, we will admit it and pass on, recognizing that just as we correct our idea of the sun rising, just as we correct our idea of the box, so we are to correct our present ideas of our own very existence and our own powers. We have supposed that we live in our senses. Thus, unless our senses are being occupied in some pleasing manner, we are unhappy. Some people are even quite miserable, not knowing that we are mind, and the senses merely the avenues by which we are related to the world of objects other than ourselves. Now, this does not mean, of course, that we are to decry or belittle the senses as something bad or useless. No, the senses are a part of us, but not the real part. Our duty in our mental physics lessons is to emancipate the mind from their dominant control. Instead of the senses mastering the mind must master the senses. But, my beloved, the mind cannot be master until it recognizes its power. Just as the horse will remain the servant of man because it is not aware of its superior strength, so man will remain a servant, beaten about willy-nilly by any wind that blows, until he realizes the glory of the higher powers of the real self of him. To de-hypnotize the mind from its sensuous enmeshment and to awaken it to the consciousness of its real inheritance, omniscience, means eternal life here And now. Now let us go back a little. In our meditations, we have found, first, that we are the abstract principle of embodiment. Then, second, that we stand to the universe as a center does to a circle. Now we go on to obtain an idea, a correct idea, of pervasion. Pervasion. That is, the all-pervading. We cannot think of space except by means of objects, these being relative one to another. One object here, another object there, gives us our idea of space. Yet we know that space is filled with substance. We get that idea from the lesson on prana. We get the very truth of it from what we have learned of atomic energy. The light from the orbs of heaven travels through this substance called ether. There is no place where it is not. Turn back to the introduction of your scientific breathings, and you find that this substance, the soul of all energy, this prana, is universal, all-pervading. Well, stop a moment and think. Try to get into the mind that truth about you being in this sea of prana. Get the idea so strongly as to identify yourself with it in such a way as to feel that you, too, are all-pervading. Now, when you say this, my beloved, you are telling the truth.